to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, it's the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes from 1946. But first, The Amazing Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. This NBC episode from November 3rd, 1950, called The Case of the Dear Dead Lady.
My boss is the smartest and the stubbornest, the fattest and the laziest, the cleverest and the craziest, the most extravagant detective in the world, Nero Wolfe.
Nero Wolfe had just come downstairs, having tended to his precious orchid. He was, as usual, seated in the library, which served as the office. He had just dialed a phone number and, with his eyes closed, was leaning back in his specially built chair, which was big enough for two, but not two of him.
Halsbrecher's Market, domestic and imported delicacies.
Mr. Halsbrecher, this is Nero Wolfe.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Wolfe. I was just about to ring you.
Well, I have need of 2 pounds of duck liver. I do not, of course, refer to the commercialized Strasbourg pâté.
Well, I appreciate the order, Mr. Wolfe, but...
Next, my cook Fritz informs me that we require 3 fine fat geese.
Look, Mr. Wolfe, there's a little matter of an unpaid
bill. You might add 12 cases of beer, a bushel of Vermont apples, green for stuffing, and a gallon of Marquesa Patricia Roman oil.
Mr. Wolfe.
In addition, Fritz has listed 6 dozen eggs, 4 braces of Sussex woodcock, and a few pounds of Westphalian ham. You have all that?
I can get it, Mr. Wolfe, but my bookkeeper...
Thanks very much, Mr. Halsbrecher. That will be all. Now then, Archie.
Yes, boss?
You seem to be worried.
Oh, I am. This means, naturally, that I'm supposed to handle Halsbrecher's delivery boy when and if he shows.
I had thought of leaving that simple matter to you.
And what about the simple matter of the money?
Money?
I hate to bring up a vulgar subject, but where is it coming from?
Oh, of course. You're right, Archie. I should have said...
Said what?
Charges.
Boss, look, you don't realize, I know, but we're into that truffle broker for 500 odd bucks and change.
All right. Then give him a check.
Okay, I will give him a check. And I hope they'll let you keep the orchids in your cell.
You're a wit, Archie.
Uh-huh. You know, I'm on the bank's mailing list. We got a notice this morning.
You don't mean...
Oh, but I do.
Again?
Yeah, you just can't take money out of an account, boss. Sometimes you gotta put some in. This is the only way to deal with the man I work for, and if I hadn't thrown him that scare, he wouldn't have been willing to listen when the door buzzer rang, and a prosperous-looking young guy in the kind of clothes that don't grow on trees came in and stood in front of the boss's chair, fiddling with the brim of his pork pie.
My name is Oliphant, Mr. Wolfe.
Oliphant?
Yes, sir, Oliphant. I am the spiritual leader and guiding head of a small religious group known as the Seekers of the Inner Power.
Ah, I see. Also a man addicted to marrying neither wisely nor well, but often.
You read the papers?
I do.
Mr. Wolfe, I am as aware of my sin-ridden past as anyone else is. The point is that I'm no longer that kind of man. Even a person such as I can see the light in time.
Good. Might I ask why you've come to see me, Mr. Oliphant?
I need your help, Mr. Wolfe.
Concerning?
A certain young lady with whom I'm deeply in love. Oh, I beg you not to confuse the present emotion with any of my earlier escapades. What I feel for Miss Dana is the pure and righteous glow of an upright seeker of the inner power.
I promise to look on you as thoroughly redeemed, Mr. Oliphant. Proceed. Oh, by the way, do I recognize the name of your young lady as a Park Avenue socialite, an amateur swimming champion?
Yes. But she's sweet, wonderful, beautiful. I've asked her to marry me, and she's given me some hope. In time, I fully expect to make her my wife.
Well, then where's the problem?
The problem is the presence of another man in her life.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm a detective, not a matchmaker.
This isn't a question of making a match, Mr. Wolfe. I have much too much respect for your talents to think of offering you such an assignment.
Exactly. What do you want me to do?
I want you to save Ilsa Dana's life.
A life?
Mr. Wolfe, this other man I spoke of is insanely jealous. Not only of Ilsa's present, but of her past as well. He has threatened to kill her.
I don't doubt your earnestness in this matter, Mr. Oliphant, but how would you know?
I was listening on an extension in Miss Dana's apartment a few days ago when Hunter called.
Hunter?
Yes, sir. Jack Hunter. Known as Jack the Babe Hunter.
Wait a minute. I know that canvas back.
Huh?
Sure. He's a coffee and cake prelim waltzer.
No, he's not. He's a boxer.
Archie is being fancy. Overlook it, Mr. Oliphant. Is Hunter in love with this lady of yours?
I doubt it. He's a man of complete moral and spiritual corruption, I believe.
Naturally, you would. But what are the facts?
In my opinion, he's after her for her money.
She has money?
To burn.
And you, Mr. Oliphant?
Me.
Can you also afford to burn?
How much do you want?
The answer to that would be astronomical. However, if you leave a check for, say, $7,000, I shall look into your matter the very moment I have completed a little research into the nutrition of the Polynesian orchid.
Oliphant's check gave our bank account a slight blood transfusion. I think it was the boss's plan to spend a week or two in the plant room before he got busy on the case. And he'd have done it, too, if that phone call hadn't come in about a little after 9, just after Wolf had polished off one of Fritz's dinners and was settling back with a stein of beer in his hand.
Don't disturb yourself, Archie. I'll get it.
Now, well, look out. You don't strain yourself, boss. You got to straighten out an elbow to reach that receiver.
You have an unfortunate flair for mixing humor with impertinence, my friend. Hello, Nero Wolf speaking.
This is Ilsa Dana, Mr. Wolf.
How do you do, Miss Dana? We were discussing you only this morning.
So I've heard.
Through whom?
Ted Oliphant.
I see. The young man seemed to be quite worried about you.
The young man should tend to his own affairs.
Said you were in some danger?
I know what he said. And not one word if it was true.
Oh?
I'd like to talk to you, Mr. Wolf.
I'm sure it'd be an immense pleasure. Where do you live?
I have an apartment at 22 Blanton Street. Could you be here soon?
I could be there in a quarter of an hour, Miss Dana. By proxy, of course.
The proxy, naturally, was yours truly. 10 minutes later, at 9:20, I walked up to Ilsa Dana's door with a nosy elevator boy giving me the 00. The reason for his interest was that her door was open and the room inside was empty except for a little twisted pile of pale pink satin, which at close range turned out to be a woman. Which woman turned out to be Ilsa Dana. And Ilsa Dana was dead.
She used to be pretty. She isn't now.
Yeah, strangulation doesn't help any girl's looks, son.
Make anything of it?
Well, the position of her body and the bloodstains on her pointed fingernails tells me that she put up a tough struggle before somebody succeeded in smothering with a pillow from the sofa over there.
Yeah, that figures. When did it happen, I wonder?
Yeah, the last 15 minutes, I'd guess. Say, who's been up in the elevator this evening?
Nobody for her.
Well, somebody came up.
Well, who says not? They could have used the stairs, you know.
Yeah. How well do you know Miss Dana?
I know exactly zero about Miss Dana.
How could you write her up and down every day and know nothing about her?
It's a rule of the house to keep your mouth shut. The rule also goes when being questioned by a cop.
A cop? Who's a cop?
Oh, I guess you're a cello player from the Philharmonic.
Look, I happen to work for a guy named Nero Wolf.
Oh.
Heard of him?
Maybe.
Well, if your memory comes alive, son, I might see my way clear to spend a few dollars with you. Understand?
I'll keep you in mind. Going down, mister?
I spent time trying to get sense out of the superintendent and a set of chambermaids, but they were as quiet as a ballpark on Christmas Eve. Then I called the cops and told them about Oliphant and Hunter. By the time I got home, the house was dark and Nero Wolf was sleeping. Next morning, I gave him the details while he drank 3 bottles of beer. When I finished, he sat for a long time and then started another bottle.
The prize fighter. What about the prize fighter, Archie?
Hunter? Well, I phoned the hotel he lives in before you got up.
And?
They told me he wasn't in.
You know, I begin to think that Mr. Oliphant brought us a more absorbing case than he suspected.
You know, I'm glad you like it.
I don't like it. I don't like work of any variety. But this thing has its points.
Well, what do we do next?
Next, we investigate my client.
What?
Merely because the reformed playboy employs a detective doesn't exempt him from suspicion, Archie.
Oh, now who's that?
I'm afraid we have no choice but to open the door and see.
My name is Young. Barstow Young.
It's nice meeting you, Mr. Young. What do you want?
I want to see Nero Wolf.
About?
About a certain young lady with whom I am deeply in love.
What? Will you repeat that?
I want to see Mr. Wolf about a certain young lady with whom I am deeply in love.
Mm-hmm. Her name, please?
Ilsa Dana.
Is it possible that you entertain plans of making her your wife?
Why, Yes, but there's a problem involved.
Another man?
Yes.
Well, and do come in. Do come in. I think we've been waiting for you. Oh, Mr. Wolf, here's another one.
Ah, Mr. Wolf.
You've come to me about Miss Ethel Dana, sir?
I have come to you, more specifically, about a man who has threatened her life.
Hmm.
How unusual.
He's a treacherous kind. Mild-mannered, you know. As we say in my profession, he underplays it.
Your profession, then, is the stage.
It is, sir.
Go on, you interest me deeply.
I was present recently when he told her that he would certainly kill her unless she mended her sinful ways.
Sinful?
No one denies that Ilse has had, shall we say, a checkered career. But the man's attitude is totally fanatical.
What's his particular brand of fanaticism, Mr. Young?
Theodore Oliphant is a religious maniac.
Well, what do you know? He's come to give Theodore a bad report card.
I don't understand. I've come to ask Mr. Wolf to prevent his murdering Miss Dana.
Am I allowed a direct question, sir?
Why, of course.
Where were you between 9 and 9.20 p.m. last night?
9 and 9.20... Why do you ask?
You said I was permitted a direct question.
Oh, well, I was walking in the park, as I remember.
Do you make a habit of walking in the park?
I have lately. I'm preparing for an important role in a forthcoming production. What's so important about last night?
From your point of view, a great deal, sir.
Well, what do you mean?
Last night, Miss Ilse Dana was murdered.
What?
Mr. Goodwin here discovered the body.
No.
I'm afraid I must insist, Mr. Young.
Why are you looking at me like that? Are you accusing me of a...
I have accused you of nothing, my dear sir.
Well, now, look, you're making a mistake. Oliphant killed her. You may be sure of that.
I have your word.
I know him. He was trying to reform her. Wanted to make her a devout follower of his cult, the Seekers of Power. I heard him tell her to her face that if she refused redemption, he would see to it that she didn't live on in her wickedness.
You could produce other witnesses.
Do you know, in your own smug way, you're as detestable a character as I have ever had.
All right. Let's everybody take five. Yeah?
Nero Wolf?
He's busy. This is Archie Goodwin.
You'll do, Goodwin. This is Jack the Babe Hunter.
Oh? How are you?
Great. Except the cops seem to want to talk to me about some murder fandango because, as I get it, you name my name.
You got it wrong.
I doubt it, and I'm coming over there to set you straight.
Why'd you ring me in on this mess, Wolf?
You knew the girl pretty well.
Me and how many more? Besides, what time was she murdered?
Last night, between 9 and 9.20.
I see.
So if you would inform the police where you were at the time, that should be that.
Yeah.
By the way, Mr. Hunter, where were you at the time?
I don't see your badge, Wolf.
I was only wondering.
I haven't been near the Dana woman for over a month. But if you're really interested, I'll give you the name of the killer.
Please do not keep us in suspense, Mr. Hunter.
A couple of years back, Ilse financed a guy in a big and lousy Shakespearean play that closed like a clam and nothing flat.
Go on.
It was money down the drain. The guy's got nerve, and he was in love with her, and he figured she'd do anything for him. So he comes back to her to finance him again, this time in Hamlet, no less.
I see.
And I don't have to tell you what a flop that would be.
You needn't tell me the actor's name either.
You know?
Mr. Barstow Young just left here.
Yeah? Well, he's your man, Wolf. He got so sore when she told him she wouldn't toss any more moolah into his broken-down career, he went off his rocker and tore it down.
Your reason for thinking so?
I met him on the street one day, and he started beefing to me with blood in his eyes. It's all I could do not to punch him.
The results might have been less fatal if you'd followed your instincts, sir.
I couldn't. The guy's built like a broomstick. He's weak as a cat. Hit him once, he'd crack like dry plaster.
I see.
What's on your mind?
This man you're accusing of Miss Dana's murder, Mr. Hunter, he was very much in love with her. She was thinking about marrying him, he said.
He said?
Yes, he did. I heard him, too.
He was talking through his skull cap. Ilse wasn't going to marry anybody.
No?
No, she couldn't.
Why couldn't she?
Well, but she just couldn't, that's all. So long.
Now we got a perfect circle with everybody pointing at everybody else. and nobody able to prove a thing.
What Hunter says isn't impossible, Archie.
You think Young did it?
I don't think at all yet. But if there's anything more dangerous than a woman scorned, it's an actor scorned. We have another visitor.
Yeah, who are you expecting?
At this point, anybody.
Hi.
Oh, you.
Yeah, I told you might hear from me.
Come on in.
Who's this?
A fellow runs the elevator at 22 Blanton Street. What do you got for me, kid?
Postcard.
Postcard?
Yeah, the cops missed it, but I spotted the edge stuck under a rug.
Nice of you to have delivered it.
Well, maybe he was just being curious.
Curious?
It's not every elevator boy who has a chance to see Nero Wolfe in the flesh.
Oh, him? Come off it, High Pockets. I'm here because you mentioned something about spending a few bucks.
Oh.
I wouldn't cross the street to see the best gumshoe that ever breathed.
Look, gumshoes don't breathe, and how would you like a sucker?
Archie, pay him and let him go.
Yeah, pay me and let me go.
Sure, Mr. Wolf. Here you are. Thanks.
Don't mention it. Anytime, pal. Anytime.
How do you like that fresh little punk?
Archie, the lad has done us nobly.
Yeah?
Typewritten card addressed to Miss Ilsa Dana.
Well, what's it say?
Rather peculiar message. Have you prayed tonight? It's signed with a single letter O.
Have you prayed tonight?
Yes.
Signed O?
Exactly. Weird, isn't it?
Well, what's weird about it? What could be plainer? Have you prayed tonight? Now, I ask you, who is the man in this deal who's interested in praying?
All of us, I hope, are God-fearing.
All right. But I ask you again, what does O stand for?
It could stand for O'Brien, Obituary, Omaha.
What about Oliphant?
Oliphant, too.
Look, what's with this indifference? The case is cracking and you slough it off. You remember what Young said? Oliphant threatened to kill her because she wouldn't join that cockeyed movement of his.
Don't exhaust yourself, Archie. We have a hard night ahead.
Yes, but I don't understand.
But I don't mean to stifle your imagination, my friend. But if you'd reserve your deductions for a little while, you could lend me some much-needed assistance.
What do you want?
I want you to become a burglar.
A burglar?
I want you to hurry over to the dead woman's apartment on Blanton Street and ransack it.
For what?
How do I know? We need help. Anything may help us. Go through the place with a fine-tooth comb.
I tore the late Miss Dana's apartment to shreds, but I saw nothing. Then, just as I was about to give it up as a bum job, I noticed a little writing desk in the living room. Pried loose the lock and spotted something among a pile of papers that belonged to no well-to-do flat. It was a pawn ticket, lot 8N046, and the address was a pawn shop around the corner on 6th Avenue. It wasn't more than 90 seconds later that I walked into the joint and tossed the ticket across the counter.
Oh yeah, this, want to redeem it.
And fast, huh, Pops?
Yeah, it's nothing that's worth much, mister.
No?
No.
Oh, what is it?
This? Small steel filing box.
Anything in it?
I don't know. Come to me locked, never been able to get it open.
We got it open, Wolf and I. Smashed the front end with a poker. There were some odds and ends inside. Old earrings, some thumbtacks, a cigarette lighter. Just trash. Then the boss stuck his fingers in and pulled out a plum.
This is it?
What do you mean, this is it?
You fail to recognize this classic document?
Huh?
A marriage license, Archie. A marriage license.
Yeah, well, whose marriage license?
The wording is self-explanatory. Listen. This is to certify, et cetera, thus licensing on this third day of May, 1946, the marriage of Miss Ilsa Dana to Mr. Johann Jaeger.
Johann Jaeger?
Exactly.
Well, who in the world is Johann Jaeger?
We'll soon see.
I don't get it.
I can understand. It's a befuddling little puzzle. It'll be very easy for one to make a fatal mistake here.
But, of course, you won't.
I won't.
3 hours later, I'd herded all the suspects into the office, and he sat in his chair and glared at them. Oliphant, Young, and Hunter. It was tense and tight, and the boss let it stay that way, saying not a word to anybody while he calmly sipped his beer. It was Oliphant who cracked first.
I didn't kill Ilsa. I couldn't have.
Jealousy is a very compelling motive, Mr. Oliphant. And you came to me, remember, complaining that there was another man in Ilsa Dana's life?
Whatever I complained about, and jealous as I was, I didn't kill her as the sacred power is my holy judge.
Being unacquainted with your sacred power, I'd have to ask you for a better authority.
Sacred power?
Oh, it simply wouldn't have been possible for me to have done it.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Because I...
I was at Mickey's Night Owl Club last night from 7 until 4 a.m.
Contemplating the sacred power, no doubt.
That can be proved, Mr. Oliphant?
Let me call now. Let the head waiter tell you.
Will you take your embarrassment as an indication that you're telling the truth?
Hey, wait a minute. You can't let him off like that.
Don't be bothersome, Archie.
Yeah, but we got that card he wrote, the one about have you pray tonight, signed with his initial.
He didn't write that card, Archie.
Now, look.
And the O is not his initial, is it, Mr. Barstow Young?
I'm afraid I don't understand.
On the contrary, I'm afraid you do. But for the record, I'll explain. Oh, Archie.
Yes, boss?
Hand Mr. Young that large red volume off the shelf behind Mr. Hunter's head.
This one?
That one, thank you. Now then, Mr. Young, you will favor me by opening the volume to page 1133.
But why?
Open it, sir. Good. You will now count six lines down from the top and read what you see.
Have you prayed tonight?
Thank you, Mr. Young.
What the devil is going
on? Mr. Young has just given us a reading from a tragedy. The line, have you prayed tonight, is spoken by the hero to the heroine just before he murders her. The name of the heroine is Desdemona. And the hero, as I'm sure you all know, is Othello.
Othello?
Yeah, the O was not Oliphant, Archie. Othello, I think, was a Shakespearean play which Miss Dana financed for our Mr. Young. And knowing she would recognize the quotation as well as the threat behind it, he sent it to her to warn her that he meant to murder her. You won't have the unmitigated gall to deny that, will you, Mr. Young?
No. No, I don't deny it.
Do I call the police?
But I didn't kill her. The fact that I sent the car doesn't mean I killed her.
Well, it'll do for my money.
But not for mine, Archie.
What?
Mr. Young couldn't have killed Miss Dana.
Why not?
Because he lacks the strength to strangle such a healthy young woman, a champion athlete. Wide awake and full of fight. He's rather a frail person, as we know. And smothering Miss Dana with that pillow was no easy task. She struggled. Therefore, she clawed the wrists of the murderer. I'm sure that if you examine Mr. Young's wrists, you will find no scratches or scars.
Here, let me see that.
Go ahead.
Well, Archie?
You're right. Nothing.
I was sure there wouldn't be. The person who actually killed Miss Dana was a powerful physical specimen.
Yeah?
Yes, Mr. Hunter. In all probability, a professional athlete. A muscular man in good condition.
You pointing at me?
Seems quite likely, doesn't it?
You're out of your head.
Am I?
Yeah.
Hier ist Dana, war ihr Frau. Nicht wahr?
Jawohl. I mean...
You said ja, Mr. Hunter. And you meant ja, yes. I asked you in German if Ilse Dana was your wife, and you in the heat of emotion answered me yes in your mother tongue.
Look, what's going on here?
Allow me to present Mr. Johann Jaeger, Archie.
Him?
I've known it since we first saw that marriage license. You see, Jack Hunter is the English translation of our friend's real name back in Germany, where he comes from, Mr. Johann Jaeger.
Oh, what do you know?
So you proved nothing. Yeah, I was married to Ilse. That's why I said she couldn't marry anybody else. But I didn't kill her. She was my wife. I loved her.
Oliphant told us you were insanely jealous of her.
What if he did? You know better.
Do we?
Sure you do. Ilse told yourself over the phone that every word Oliphant said was a lie.
Interesting.
What is?
How you could possibly know what Ilse Dana told me over the phone. I haven't mentioned it to you or anybody else.
Well, you see...
I see most clearly, Mr. Jaeger, that you must have been in the apartment with her listening on the extension phone, or you couldn't possibly have that information. And it was only a few minutes after that telephone call that Ilse Dana was smothered to death.
And I see it's about time I said goodnight.
Wait a minute, Jaeger.
Good work, Archie. I advise you to sit still, Mr. Johann Jaeger Hunter.
I was right. I told you he threatened to kill her.
But why?
I've only guessed at the story. Reconstructed it, so to say. But I think you and Mr. Young are to be congratulated.
On what, sir?
On not having won your fair lady. You've always thought of her as a sweet, demure society girl. But actually, she was a vicious person, as bad as the man who killed her, if not worse. She tortured him cruelly for four long years.
How can you say that about her?
How can you doubt it, Mr. Oliphant? There must have been a great many men in her life. We know at least two definitely, you and Mr. Young.
But she was in love with me.
She was in love with me.
I'm sorry to shatter your illusions, but she was not in love with either of you. She was using you for her purpose.
What was her purpose?
Tormenting the man she married. That was her preoccupation day and night. She delighted in tyrannizing over him, as one might in breaking a bull or taming a wild mustang. Do I come near the truth, Hunter?
Yes. Until I couldn't stand it any longer.
May I ask then why you married her?
Why? Because I couldn't help myself. I crawled for her. I married her on the terms that nobody should ever know I was her husband. She was too good for me, she told me that to my face over and over. But we belonged to different worlds. But I was crazy about her, so I took it. What I've taken, you wouldn't believe.
Oh, I'm sure I would, Mr. Hunter. I'm a very understanding man. The question is, will a jury believe you? And that we must begin to learn immediately. Archie.
Yes, sir?
Phone for Inspector Kramer.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet.
The amazing Nero Wolfe, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 3rd, 1950 on NBC. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes from the Mutual Broadcasting System, heard on May 20th, 1946, with a new person replacing one of the lead characters on the series, which featured the famous team of Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce as Holmes and Watson, respectively, who not only portrayed the famous characters on radio, but also in film. Nigel Bruce couldn't make it for this broadcast, so he was replaced by a character actor named Joseph Kearns, heard thousands of times on radio during its golden era. But according to my research of all the radio plays he was a part of, this was his first and final part in a Sherlock Holmes story. The story itself, based on the adventure of the Sussex Vampire, first published in 1924 in London's Strand magazine, and renamed for this radio show to The Haunting of Sherlock Holmes.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and the New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now let's join our good friend, Dr. Watson.
I'm out here on the patio, Mr. Bartell.
Well, I see you're making the most of a wonderful evening, Doctor.
Oh yes, my boy. It's pleasant to sit out here on a summer's night with a good friend and a pipe, a bottle of wine. Help yourself to a glass and sit down.
Oh, thank you, sir. Already with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure, Doctor?
Yes, and a strange story it is. It was in the autumn of 1899, Mr. Bartell, that I decided both as doctor and friend that Sherlock Holmes was in desperate need of a holiday.
He'd really been overdoing it, huh?
Oh, yes, my boy. It had been an unusually busy year, and at the time my story begins, Holmes was suffering from complete exhaustion. So, my boy, toward the end of October in that year, we found ourselves in the charming city of Kazanlak, capital of the small Balkan kingdom of Groznia. A few nights after our arrival, I remember Pavlo Krasnodar, Groznian minister of police, took us to hear the singing of a certain young Hungarian opera star, Miss Lily Reina, who was then touring Europe. At our table was her fiancé, the charming young aristocrat Prince Stefano. And it was very easy to see as he sat there listening to the song that the boy was head over heels in love. It was a haunting melody that she sang, Mr. Bartell. I can almost hear it now. You're a very lucky man, Prince Stefano. Your fiancée's voice matches her beauty.
Oh, yes, Dr. Watson. I consider myself the most fortunate man in Groznia.
She has a magnificent voice, the finest singing I can recall since...
Since when, Mr. Holmes?
I was thinking of a prima donna of the Warsaw Opera who attained considerable success in London, Miss Irene Adler.
Oh, by George, yes. She was a criminal, one of the few that outwitted you, Holmes. Oh, that was a case that would have interested you, Mr. Krasnodar.
I'm familiar with it, my dear doctor.
You are unusually solemn tonight, Krasnodar. Have a glass of wine, and I will bring Lily to our table, and we will toast our happiness.
I'm afraid I cannot drink to that toast, Prince Stefano.
Why not? Oh, I know why. You, the notorious lady killer of Grotznia, are jealous. You're in love with Lily yourself.
Oh. Prince Stefano, I have sad news for you. I have come here tonight, but for one purpose. To arrest your fiancée.
Huh?
You're joking.
It is far from a joke. At my ministry, we have evidence, conclusive evidence, that Miss Lily Reyna is a spy.
Spy? Good Lord.
And the penalty for spying in Grozny?
Ah, that, my friend, is why I would drink no toast. In Grozny, the penalty for espionage is death.
Yes, I know, but Holmes, you must do something to save that girl. You can't just turn in for the night without trying to help her in some way. They might shoot her in the morning.
Krasnodar's no fool. Since he's made the arrest, obviously he has a watertight case against the girl.
I suppose so.
One last pipe.
You know, Holmes, I couldn't understand her fiancé's behavior. He didn't do a thing. Just stood there and let Krasnodar arrest the girl.
What could he have done? Krasnodar is commissioner of police. There was no point in arguing with him until the evidence had been examined.
I imagine the prince will try and pull some political strings. After all, Grozny...
Come in. Come in.
Who's this now?
You wish to speak to me?
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I have come to talk to you about my baby. My name is Martha Gregett.
Your baby? Mr. Holmes doesn't...
Oh, my baby. She is 20 years old, and she is flaxen-haired and beautiful.
Oh, that's entirely different matter. We'll be delighted to help you. Delighted. Sit down, won't you?
On whose behalf have you come to me?
Poor Lily Reyna.
Lily Reyna? Well, that's the girl who's arrested tonight.
I am only her dresser. And yet I'm Martha Gregett. I'm her mother and father. I have toured Europe with her ever since she left Vienna.
She sent you to me tonight, I suppose.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. She said you would understand.
What does she mean by that, I wonder?
She said that Mr. Holmes would take care that a talent like hers should not perish just because she had broken a few laws.
In other words, she wishes me to establish her innocence in the same breath as she confesses her guilt. I'm afraid I don't take that sort of plan. Good night to you.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
Krasnodar.
I am glad that you came to my office this morning. I can show you the proof of Miss Lily Reyna's guilt. Oh. As distinguished foreigners, I should like you to know that though the penalty for political crimes is swift and severe, we are most careful that the incriminating evidence is beyond question. You see these letters?
Yeah.
We found them sewed into the bodies of her gown.
Oh, good gracious me.
There are a series of highly dangerous letters from Josip, the leader of the Revolutionary Party, with whom she is obviously hand in glove. Here, you may examine them if you wish.
See, it looks like Greek to me.
My knowledge of the Groznian language is far from perfect, but these letters certainly seem to incriminate their owner beyond doubt.
You will observe that the letters have followed her to each of the cities in which she has been singing. All of them ask questions as to the military garrisons and the chances of a successful revolution. She has been a dangerous spy.
Yes, I can see that, sir. But even so, isn't the death penalty excessively severe, particularly for a woman?
Dr. Watson, the Balkan states are a hotbed of European intrigue. Our penalties must be severe, and we cannot make concessions to the sex of a culprit.
This man Josip, the writer of these letters, have you been able to find any trace of him?
None. If only we could. But we have never even seen the man. However, we are fortunate to trap his assistant and apparently the lady of his choice.
Lady of his choice? But she was engaged to Prince Stefano.
Undoubtedly a blind. In her home, we found an unsigned love letter in English. It was in the same handwriting as these letters from Josip.
Are you satisfied, Watson?
Well, I suppose...
Obviously, she's guilty. Well, there's no place for me in this affair, particularly when you consider that she made a virtual confession in sending her dresser to me last night.
I suppose you're right, but just the same. If you want to trap this man, Josip, I should think you'd be wiser to hold the girl as a hostage. It might bring him on the scene if he's afraid she'll talk. If you hang her, you'll never find him.
Dr. Watson, in my country we found that prompt justice gets the best results. And for your edification, we do not hang in Grozny. The death penalty is exacted at the hands of a firing squad.
And when is the execution to take place?
You have timed your visit well, my friends. Please to step onto the balcony.
Oh, dear.
I think that answers your question, Mr. Holmes.
Great Scott. Against the wall, blindfolded, with a firing squad before her. It's Lily Rayner.
Grosnian justice indeed moves swiftly, Mr. Krasnodar.
It has to, my friend. Captano!
Mr.
Vospritov?
Oh, great heavens, I can't watch this. I don't care what she's done. I don't want to see it.
Ant! Dov! Trus! Atta!
Oh, no. Oh, she's crumbled to the ground, poor little thing.
What an artist.
Oh, hard to see a woman executed, even if she is a spy.
May all traitors to Groznia die as swiftly.
Oh, but what a loss. Her beautiful voice.
Yes, her beautiful voice. Shall we go in, gentlemen?
Huh. That's her song you're playing, isn't it?
Yes. The melody still haunts me. You blame me, don't you?
Blame you for what?
For not preventing her death.
Oh, of course I don't blame you, Holmes. The girl was guilty. Grosnian law prescribes the death penalty for her crime. After all, what could you have done about it?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And yet...
And yet what?
I wonder if she was right. I wonder if artistry such as hers isn't of greater value to humanity than spying in any cause.
It's not much good worrying about that now, is it? The girl's dead and buried.
Watson.
What's the matter, Holmes?
Did you hear that?
I hear what?
I could swear that I heard the dead girl's voice. She was singing her song to my accompaniment.
Oh, dear me. Your nurse must be in a very bad state, Holmes. Hearing voices indeed. You'd better turn in for the night.
Perhaps. It may be more my conscience than my nerves.
Well, I'll give you a sleeping draught if you like.
No, my dear Shepita. I'm all right. It's funny, though. I could have sworn that... Oh, well.
Play some more of that tune, will you, Holmes? Heavens!
Uh-huh. You heard it this time, eh, Watson?
Of course I did. It was her voice. There's no mistaking it. Holmes, I don't believe in ghosts, and yet I could swear...
Shh. Listen.
Good Lord, it is her.
Shh.
I beg you, my guest. Do not let them go and punish the kill me.
Where are you?
In the air about you. Avenge my death.
Strike a match,
Sherlock
Watson.
Holmes.
Strike a match.
Yes.
Light the gas.
Look. There in the moonlight, moving past the window. It's the figure of that girl that was shot today.
A match, Watson. I'll guard the door.
There. She's vanished, Holmes.
And not by means of this door. I was standing in front of it. And there's no other exit from the room.
Holmes, I don't like this. We're dabbling in the supernatural.
Stop trembling, Watson. Whatever the explanation for this may be, one thing at least I find quite fascinating.
And what's that?
It's the first time in my career that I've ever had a ghost for a client.
Dr. Watson will tell us the rest of his story in just a second, so I'm just going to tell you about a wine that adds the perfect finishing touch to a good meal. Petri California Muscatel. Ah, the flavor of big, plump muscat grapes picked when they're full to bursting with luscious juice. You know it's good if it's Petri. Well, Dr. Watson, so you had a ghostly visitor calling on you at the hotel that night, huh?
Yes, my boy. And I confess I was so badly shaken by the experience that I hardly slept a wink all night. Well, the next morning, after an early breakfast, Holmes and I located the proprietor of our hotel and began to question him as to the history of the building.
Do you wish to explore it, gentlemen?
Oh, very much. My friend and I are most interested in such things.
Follow me, please. These stairs lead to our wine cellars.
Hmm.
Thousands of feet have tramped up and down these steps. Only a select few know that behind this tapestry here... Behind this tapestry, gentlemen, is apparently a solid wall. But the wall is not solid. You have a match, perhaps?
Oh, yes, of course. Here you are.
We keep a candle here in this niche for just such an occasion as this. So, please hold back tapestry, sir.
I've got it.
Thank you. Now, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth brick up from the stair, I press it so, and...
Look, Holmes. Great Scott, a section of the wall swinging out.
Disclosing a stairway behind it. Ingenious.
There, gentlemen, allow me to give you the candle.
But aren't you going to lead the way?
No, sir, I'm not going to lead the way, thank you. I have owned this hotel for 32 years, and yet I have never explored this stairway.
Why, sir? Is it reputed to be haunted?
Yes, it is supposed to be haunted. The candle, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. I'm much obliged to you. Come on, Watson.
I shall wait here.
I don't think I care for this, Holmes. Frightfully dark in here. It's damp and moldy, too.
Look, Watson. Huh? Look here.
Where?
This landing.
Landing? Well, nothing but dust and cobwebs.
A closer, old chap. There's the faint imprint of a woman's heel here.
Huh. Oh, by George, yes. Shoes that have gone both up and down these stairs in the last 24 hours.
Exactly. And there's a reverse print over here. Huh. This, my dear chap, I think accounts for the appearance and disappearance of our visitor last night.
Yes, but Holmes, it was the singer, Lily Rayner. Yet we saw her shot yesterday morning.
Rubbish, Watson, rubbish. What have we to do with walking corpses? Come on, old fellow. Let's see where this stairway leads us to.
Oh, but then what did we see if we didn't see a ghost last night?
That, my dear chap, is what we have to find out. Wait a minute. Staircase ends here. That's strange.
Yes, and against a blank wall. That doesn't make sense.
And yet the entrance to this stairway was an apparent blank wall too, remember? Let's see if the same formula will do the same trick here.
Now, what was it? Oh, yes. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, 4 bricks up from the step. I press so and... Open sesame!
The wall swinging back again.
What do we see? Another tapestry. A tapestry that seems very familiar.
Well, I should say so. This hidden door leads into your very own bedroom.
Exactly, my dear chap. Now we know beyond doubt how the apparent ghost made her appearance last night.
Don't you suppose it must have been someone impersonating the dead girl?
That, my dear fellow, is a question that can only be answered by calling on her fiancé, Prince Stefano. Let's go over and see him at once, shall we? Prince Stefano, I dislike to intrude upon your personal tragedy, but I must ask you a few questions.
Ask your questions.
Did your fiancée have a sister who may have resembled her?
No. She had no living relatives at all, Mr. Holmes.
Well, tell me this. Who inherits her estate, sir?
Her dresser. A faithful old woman by the name of Martha Gregert, who looked after her for some years.
I see. Did Miss Rayner have an understudy?
As a singer, she could have no understudy. She was irreplaceable.
You say as a singer. Was she also an actress?
Oh, but yes, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, really? How very unusual for an opera singer.
Quiet, Watson, please.
The first time I saw her was in Tosca. She was not another baronet, but her performance was a very promising one, considering her age. In my country, of course, she was not able to appear in anything but opera because she could not speak Grosnian.
She didn't speak Grosnian? Now I have the answer.
The answer?
Yes, to what?
To this entire story, from the arrest of your fiancée to certain strange visitations at my hotel last night.
What do you mean, Mr. Holmes?
If you come to my hotel room tonight, my dear prince, I can safely promise to make the whole matter clear to you. And I dare go a little further. I think that I can even help you to find consolation in your bereavement. Ladies and gentlemen, I can see that you wonder why Dr. Watson and I have asked you to come here to our hotel tonight.
As Minister of Police, I should be stupid if I did not realize that since your other two guests are the Prince Stefano and Martha Gregor, the dead girl's dresser, that this meeting has some bearing on the execution of Miss Lily Rayner.
I should prefer to say her murder.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you please, I should like to make my own position in this matter quite clear. 2 nights ago, you, Martha, came to me on behalf of Miss Lily Rayner to solicit my aid. I, convinced that she was guilty, refused that aid. Yesterday morning, she died before a firing squad. Last night, her ghost appeared to me here in this room and asked me to avenge her death.
Her ghost? What nonsense are you talking?
It would be no surprise to me if her poor murdered soul came back from the grave to ask for justice, sir.
I saw her, my good woman, almost as clearly as I see you all now.
I agree with Krasnodar. To talk of ghosts is beyond belief.
Please let me finish. When I had this visitation last night, I decided to investigate the case thoroughly. I did so today, and I can assure you that Miss Rayner paid for a crime she did not commit.
What grounds do you have for saying that, Mr. Holmes?
The letters that were supposedly written to her were in the Groznian language, and yet today Prince Stefano informed me that she could not appear in the theater here because she did not speak the language.
But those letters were sewed into her body's home.
That's true, my dear fellow. And who was the only person who had the opportunity to do that? The same person who came to me two nights ago and succeeded in convincing me that Miss Rayner was guilty, her own dresser and supposed friend.
Are you suggesting that
I'm suggesting that you inherited her estate on her death, and that you would have lost that inheritance if she had married and had a family of her own.
What do you have to say in answer to that, Marta?
That I am among madmen. This talk of ghosts proves it.
Very well, then. Let the ghosts support my theories. Hand me the violin, will you, Watson, old fellow?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. And now, turn down the gas light.
Right, sure.
That's it. And listen.
Yes. Yes. That's her voice.
And that's her figure standing there in the moonlight, even though she's dead.
Now what do you say, Martha? Aren't you responsible for her death? If her ghost can sing, I'm sure it can also talk.
I did do it. The letters belong to me. I sacrificed my own baby for gold. May heaven have mercy on my soul.
A confession in front of four witnesses. Why not take her away, Krasnodar? We'll testify later.
I will. Come with me, Martha.
I killed my own baby. I deserve to die.
Can I turn up the gas, Holmes?
Ask Prince Stefano.
No. Do not turn it up. I've seen and heard the ghost of my beloved when the lights were down. I'm not afraid. Please play her melody again, Mr. Holmes.
Aren't you afraid, Prince Stefano?
Why should I be afraid? Lily, my beloved, your spirit, I know, can be no evil one. I love it as I loved you living. The pleasure of love lasts but an instant. Love's regrets last for a lifetime. This is now my lifetime, brightened by your gracious ghost.
I'm sure this is a very touching scene, but it's getting dreadfully maudlin. All right, Miss Rayner. You may come from behind the tapestry now. Watson, old chap, turn up the gaslight. There's a good fellow.
Right, you are, Holmes.
Prince Stefano, permit me to reintroduce you to your far-from-ghostly fiancée, Miss Lily Rayner.
Lily, my beloved, you are not dead.
No, I am not dead. Though I cannot see how Sherlock Holmes fathomed my secret.
And there, my dear young lady, you're in exactly the same boat as I am.
Surely the answer is obvious. You gave me the key yourself, Prince Stefano.
I did, but how, Mr. Holmes?
When you informed me that Miss Rayner had once played the title role in Tosca.
Tosca? What's that got to do with anything,
Consider Holmes? The plot, Watson. A minister of police who is very susceptible to a lady's charms arranges a false execution. Knowing Mr. Krasnodar's weakness, Miss Rayner, you prevailed upon him to do likewise.
Huh. Well, then the whole execution was a piece of pantomime. The rifles must have contained blanks.
That's right, old fellow. And what should have heightened my suspicion, Miss Rayner, was the fact that at the moment of your apparent death, Mr. Krasnodar quoted a line from Tosca. He said, "What an artist." I was not perceptive enough at the time to evaluate the remark correctly, I'm afraid. When the simulated execution took place, you were free, but assumed dead.
But why should I indulge in such a trick, Mr. Holmes?
You reasoned that had you come to me directly, I might easily have turned you over as a fugitive from justice. And when you decided to dramatize the situation and appear last night as an apparent ghost, you knew it would, well, at the very least, stimulate my curiosity. It would cause me to investigate the matter and possibly to learn the truth and clear you from suspicion.
Well, yes, but Holmes, if she's innocent, how about the love letter in English, which was in the handwriting of Josip, the revolutionary leader?
Well, I can see only one explanation for that. You, Prince Stefano, are that mysterious revolutionary Josip.
Stefano? Oh, no, that is not possible.
Mr. Holmes, you are a visitor in my country. I do not suppose you will be staying here much longer.
Stefano, all these months you have deceived me.
Silence, Lily. Gentlemen, I hope for your own sake you will not be staying here much longer.
Oh. I've been threatened by far more imposing adversaries than you, Prince Stefano. I suggest that you leave my room. It's none of my business dabbling in Groznian political affairs. Your secret is safe. In any case, I came to Groznia for a holiday. Goodbye.
Huh. Goodbye, Mr. Holmes.
Huh. For my soul, Holmes, if we were in London, you wouldn't behave in this offhand way.
But we're in Groznia, old chap, aren't we? Hand me the violin, will you?
All right, here you are.
Thanks. You know, Watson, I've only had professional dealings with two singers in my life. The first was Irene Adler, and she fooled me, oh, so cleverly.
And this singer tried to fool you and failed dismally. Seems to me the score's about even.
No, old chap, no. This one was an amateur. Irene Adler will always be the woman. Ah, well, I think that's enough excitement for one day, don't you? After all, I am supposed to be taking a holiday.
Doctor, that was a swell story. And I'll bet that you were a lot more interested in the beautiful Lily than your story tonight would have us believe.
Well, of course I'm interested in a beautiful woman. But then what man isn't?
Check. Well, Dr. Watson, what new Sherlock Holmes adventure do you have lined up for us next week?
Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a most unusual story in which Sherlock Holmes crossed swords with a famous Frenchman and proved that although the English have been called a nation of shopkeepers, that a murder did not always prove to be a good bargain.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Untuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from the 20th of May, 1946. And that wraps up this hour of mystery, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.